Apartment people, my name is Dave, and I bring you good news. From Champion, River Park of Dublin, it's a brand new community now open and leasing. I've been to it. It's kitchen clean. And they've got a new enticement. You get 2 months free when you sign a 12-month or longer lease, and you move in by the beginning of October. Everything's new. New pool, new fitness center, free Starbucks coffee, EV charging stations, parking, garage. River Park of Dublin. Now make the move, literally. LiveWithChampion.com. Schedule a tour. LiveWithChampion.com.
It all happened so fast, just a few days into a camping trip, and suddenly I was in a nightmare. In the chaos and aftermath of the evening, I kept thinking, I should be dead now. I should have died several times over. I don't know what cruel twist of fate or ironic karma has led me to being here and alive, while so many of my friends have been lost. Lost. Can I really say lost? Deep down, I fear they are not just lost. My hands tremble even now as I remember the madness of those nights in the forest. Men and monsters, or at least what looked like monsters, lurk in those woods. I still doubt everything I saw in the haze of terror. I don't know where they are now. I barely escaped, and I don't know if I could bring myself to go back. I don't know if anything could convince me to re-enter that hideous place and look again upon that edifice of horror. Sorry, I need to compose myself. I will try my best to recount the tale of what had happened to my friends and I that night, over a year ago on May Eve in the shadows of Mount Deception. My friends Casey, George, Mark, Rachel, Jonah, and I were setting out on a camping trip in the Olympic National Forest in Washington. We were going to be journeying through the forest from campground to campground, hiking, climbing, and generally having a good time outdoors for almost the entire week of late April. We drove down through beautiful countryside on the way through the National Forest and towards Deception Basin at the camp nearby. Living in the city for so long, I had forgotten how nice it really was here in the Pacific Northwest. This was going to be great for all of us out here on a week-long adventure in the beautiful National Forest with an exciting mountain range to explore. We were well provisioned and thought we should be set for whatever could happen. As exciting as it was to be here, I was a little nervous as well. I was not the most adventurous type, and I had not been away from home for so long. Even with my friends as company, the time we would be away had me a little apprehensive. I felt a hand on my shoulder and looked up out of my reverie to see Jonah. She wore an expression of concern and empathy as she must have read my emotions. "It'll be okay, Nick," she assured me, smiling gently as she spoke. Jonah was my best friend, almost more like a big sister I never had. She looked out for me and always had my back. She was practically family, and after my mom had passed away, Joe would always joke that she had helped to raise me, and honestly, she wasn't wrong. "I know it seems like a long trip, but the time will fly when you're out having fun, and if any of these knuckleheads give you any trouble for being homesick, I'll kick them in the balls." She smiled again while pointing to Mark and George and gesturing a mock threat.
"Who, us?"
Mark said with feigned indignation dripping from the response as he suppressed a chuckle of his own.
"Not me if that's the case. I am smart enough not to mess with Joe."
George agreed quickly while pretending to hide behind Mark. We laughed a bit until Rachel chimed in.
How long until we get to the first camp? I'm so hungry. I want something warm to eat. These snack bars suck. Thanks for managing to pick the one flavor that tastes like dirt, Mark.
She said accusingly, while she also suppressed a slight smile.
Sorry, my lady. I didn't realize you had such a refined palate. I have bad news about the rest of the trip's menu in that case.
Mark responded with a sardonic grin. George referenced the map and the GPS to double-check, though most reception would be gone once we got far enough into the forest.
Probably about 10 more minutes or so. Keep on this trail.
He said, adjusting his glasses slightly.
That's not too bad. Stop complaining and enjoy the sights.
Casey said while rolling down a window and sticking her head out. We were almost there and excited to start our adventure. After a few more minutes of driving and a few more complaints of needing to get there so they could
take a piss like a racehorse,
as Mark so elegantly put it, we arrived at our campsite.
Don't forget to put up the Discover Pass so we don't get fined,
George mentioned as we started unloading the car. He was always fretting over little things like that. Despite being the kind of know-it-all and sometimes a little too proud of it, he was a solid guy, and we relied on him to plan out and research a lot of our trips and shared adventures.
Yeah, I got it. Not like a ranger is likely to enforce it out here. I don't think they even know this park exists in the state park registry,
Mark said while laughing at his own joke.
Hey Nick, the car ride's over. Want a beer?
Mark smiled and was already looking to unpack the cooler.
Nah, I'm good. Maybe later,
I replied.
More for me.
He cracked open a can and hopped out of the car. Mark was always on vacation in his mind, even when we were at work. He was one of my oldest friends since high school, and always managed to bring me out of my shell into crazy adventures. Because of our long history, I normally didn't mind when he got too raucous for his own good. Rachel brushed past both of us holding her brimming suitcase, which she had managed to cram half of her wardrobe in by the looks of it. She was holding up her cell phone with her other hand, and a half-panicked grimace was planted on her face for all to see.
Oh my god, I thought these were like official parks for camping. Don't they have park Wi-Fi or satellites or something?
She groaned and kept wandering around the campsite vainly searching for a signal.
Watch where you're walking, Rach. The big roots by the tree could be a tripping hazard.
Jonah shouted out the warning, but as if on cue, Rachel tumbled over and fell, dropping her bag and phone in a heap.
Oh my god! She shouted in frustration. If my phone is broken, I am going home. I was supposed to get tons of pretty forest pictures and videos to rub in Maddie's face. How am I supposed to show that I'm having a great time on vacation while she is stuck back home if I broke the damn thing day one?
She laughed a bit like she was joking, but sighed while turning the phone over in her hand and inspecting it for damage. We all tried not to laugh at her outburst, and Mark couldn't resist chiming in.
I don't know, babe. Maybe by your logic, there's an official state park. An Apple store to buy a new one?
A grin spread on his face as he watched Rachel's frustration. George started laughing as well, but suddenly stopped. Mark looked back just in time to get punched in the shoulder so hard he almost fell down.
Oh, what the hell, Joe? I get punched for laughing?
He said in fake outrage.
At your girlfriend's misfortune, laughing hurts more,
she said with a smile, and as she was about to respond, she kicked him in the shin.
That's two for flinching, by the way,
she said as she smiled, satisfied with the conclusion.
Okay, I surrender,
Mark said while bowing low to Jonah as she moved past. She high-fived Rachel and went to start unloading the van. As I was laughing, Mark elbowed me in the gut and shoved two bags of tents into my hands.
Come on, let's get this set up while the sun is still out.
I agreed and followed him, and we began setting up our campground. The area was pretty rocky and not the nicest campground, but it was so close to the mountain and its many trails that we supposed we had to give up something for it. I struggled to get the tents deployed at first, but after a while, I had gotten one of the tents up and Mark had deployed his. I heard a thud and saw the last bag drop from nearby when I stood up and Mark glanced down at me and quickly said,
"Oh, by the way, there's one more. That's all you, good luck. I gotta take a smoke break."
He smiled and ran away laughing, leaving me with the remaining tent to set up. Jonah had come along, and she helped me set up the last tent in good time. We had gotten the campground nice and comfortable with our chairs and cooler of provisions. Casey was helping collect some firewood since we likely wouldn't have enough for our trip, and we didn't see a place to collect any since the ranger station was closed this time of year for whatever reason. I remember thinking it was odd since it seemed a prime camping time of year. As we continued to set up the camp and start a fire, I heard a voice call out from the edge of the campsite. I realized we were not as alone as I thought we were. A tall man in a baggy, ill-fitted ranger's outfit approached us along with a younger-looking and admittedly very pretty woman. Her ranger uniform also did not seem to fit right, but mostly because it exaggerated certain features near the chest and seemed to have an inordinate amount of cleavage and not apparent undershirt to go with her regulation outfit. I tried not to focus on it, not to be rude, but as they approached, I couldn't help it and she winked at me as she caught my stare. I felt myself blushing as I tried to duck back a bit while my friends approached the newcomers.
"Hello everyone, my name is Ranger Kyle, and this here is my associate, Ranger Jessica."
He gestured towards her, and she smiled at all of us. I looked at my friends, and as expected, George and Mark were gawking as well, while Jonah remained stoic and betrayed no emotion. Rachel was glaring at Mark, and looked annoyed that Ranger Jessica had caught his attention as thoroughly as it had ours. Casey rolled her eyes also, unimpressed by the ranger.
"Hi everyone, so happy you decided to camp here this weekend," Jessica said with another exuberant smile.
She almost seemed to pose after, and she blatantly leaned in while speaking in a way that almost made George's jaw hit the ground. The girls groaned at this, except for Joe, who spoke.
"I'm happy to see there are some rangers out here. We were not sure what the rules for firewood gathering were, if we were allowed to get our own or if we had to buy some from you. We will need several bundles."
Ranger Kyle looked confused at the comment and then smiled again and said,
"Of course, right, of course, firewood. Fresh out at the moment, so you all have our blessings to gather some. We just wanted to come check in and welcome you. You picked a fantastic weekend to come to Mount Deception. It is May Eve tomorrow night, and we have a few other campers here who are partaking in a midnight celebration. I'm sure they would welcome more revelers. It is, after all, Walpurgis night tomorrow."
"Walpurgis night? I didn't know too much about it besides being the opposite equinox day to All Hallows Eve. It was supposed to be a pagan holiday or something."
I thought that was interesting. A bunch of people were out here celebrating it. Rachel spoke first in our group with a disinterested,
"Ew, you mean that pagan witching day? Creepy. Why would a bunch of people really go out into the woods and light bonfires and freak out over some old holiday anyway?"
She rolled her eyes and then sneered at Jessica in particular and went back to camp. The rest of our group shrugged, a bit embarrassed by the rudeness of the statement, but also unsure of what to say to the rangers. Casey followed Rachel soon after, muttering something under her breath, and I thought I heard the word, "slutty."
"Well, just think about it, and don't hesitate to ask for anything else," The ranger station is closed. Had some faulty wiring. We do have a camp near the mountain if you need anything. It is a little far out, but you should be able to find it, Kyle said.
Yes, it could get terribly boring there. We always welcome new visitors to stay a while, relax, and enjoy coming out of the wilderness, Jessica said while never taking her eyes off of Mark. As they turned to leave, she...
Brand new luxury apartments. If you're in the market, listen. Brand new luxury apartments. Champion has a new property, River Park of Dublin, which is a mile south of Dublin. Location is everything. Spacious 1, 2, and 3 bedroom homes, designer finishes, resort style amenities, exceptional customer service. That's Champion. Champion's brand new luxury apartments, River Park of Dublin. Now do something about it. Visit livewithchampion.com. Livewithchampion.com.
We all know that feeling. You finally manage to get away on vacation and the worrying starts. Will that bogus beware of dogs sign keep your home safe? What about that fake camera you set up? And will someone finally find your old hide and key rock? That's where ADT comes in. All that stuff, it's safe-ish. It seems fine when you don't really think about it, but you know it truly doesn't work. Instead, ADT provides security solutions that keep you actually safe, giving you real peace of mind. Because vacation is supposed to be, you know, relaxing. Don't settle for safe-ish. Visit ADT.com today to learn more.
Shot one last wink at us and George continued to gawk. Mark leaned on a tree, shifting his cigarette and smiling back at Ranger Jessica. Now that Rachel had walked away, he was being a bit of a dick. No harm in flirting, but on a trip with your girlfriend? It was pretty blatant. I made a mental note to remind him not to be a jerk later. The rangers left back to their camp. I thought it was weird that they were not at the station. The excuse for why they were not had seemed very strange and something felt off. The silence was broken by George flatly stating, I'd hit that. Mark nodded and clapped him on the shoulder, and Jonah put her face in her palm and just muttered, Men. We resumed setting up our camp. It was getting into the twilight hours, and we had done some minor exploring near the base of Mount Deception, but we reined it in to wait for tomorrow to a full day of exploration. There was little discussion over our encounter with the rangers, and Rachel was giving Mark a seriously cold shoulder. We had started a nice campfire and were cooking hot dogs and drinking the awful beer that Mark had brought just because a case was super cheap. You know, Mark, George said while grinning, you could have saved the $20 and just pissed in 24 cans. It would have tasted the same. Mark laughed and quipped back. It's an acquired taste, you ignorant douche. We all laughed at the back and forth until Rachel mentioned how.
You could go share a few beers with that slutty ranger, Mark. I hope you two have fun.
That made it a bit awkward, and Mark did not say anything to smooth it over besides a half-hearted apology. Things quieted down, and Casey and Rachel had gone to sleep in their tents. George was heading to bed, too, and waved goodnight. Jonah said she would wrap everything up and go to sleep last. There was an odd chill in the air that didn't quite feel right for this time of year, and something about it made Jonah seem tense. Whatever it was, she seemed distracted by what I was trying to talk to her about, and more focused on every perceived sound in the woods beyond.
Oh, what was that? I'm sorry, Nick.
She had said while looking over her shoulder and gently prodding the campfire with a stick.
This place is nice, but something feels a bit off. Those rangers did not seem right, and I don't think that it seems like no other campers are here. Maybe it is just my imagination. I'm going to wait to go to sleep for just a bit. Go on and get some shut-eye. I will be fine.
She smiled again, and I took her word for it and went to my tent to go to sleep. Despite how relaxed I'd felt earlier, I had a hard time getting to sleep. Maybe what Joe had said was getting me to question our safety out here. I thought the rangers seemed overly friendly, and the May Eve celebration invitation was strange. This campground was kind of in the middle of nowhere near a not-so-often-hiked mountain.
yet it still seemed strange no other campers were here at the site. Just some celebration tomorrow night, but where? Besides that, it felt like I heard something at the edge of the perceived sounds of the forest, a rhythmic chanting or murmuring that sounded like people. Maybe they were closer than we thought, but what are they really doing? I managed to slip into a fitful sleep after an hour or two, and what little I could remember from my dreams were colored in the paranoid shades of anxiety and fear. I was woken up by screaming. I bolted upright and rushed out of my tent, still in my boxers.
"Rachel, where are you? Somebody, help!"
Casey was screaming and pacing back and forth. Her clothes had blood on them, and as I surveyed the campground, I saw almost all of our supplies were either gone or destroyed, and near Casey and Rachel's tents, there was a trail of what looked like blood. "What the hell happened?" I blurted out as I started feeling the air of panic and frenzy overtake me as well. Jonah was walking around the campsite's perimeter, holding a large hunting knife and looking around in every direction as if trying to track a secret. Her eyes were narrowed, and she looked very intense. She softened slightly when she saw me emerge from the tent, and I could tell something very bad had happened last night. I just don't know what the hell it was. George was there too. He was still in his tent and only peeking out, apparently holding a can of bear mace and begging us to make sure it was safe before he came out. "I knew we shouldn't have left that food out. I told Mark and Rachel to put that stuff away, but they were too busy fighting. It was probably a frickin' bear or mountain lion. Both Rachel and Mark, those idiots, they're probably dead because they didn't listen and went out last night." George whined a sound after his tirade that sounded equal parts annoyed and scared for his life. Apparently, they had left their tents at some point. Mark, having said he was leaving for a smoke, had left first. Rachel thought he was going to the ranger camp to see Jessica and followed. They were shouting and rustling, and Rachel had come back crying, but Mark had never came back. I don't know if he really left Rachel for that ranger camp for an allegedly midnight rendezvous, but it didn't matter. Mark had not come back. Rachel left after 2 hours to confront him. That was about an hour ago, I was told. Now she had not come back either. Casey was woken up first and saw both of them were missing, and then saw our campsite was totally destroyed, along with apparent traces of blood all over. I thought George might be right about the animal attack, but I realized that we would have heard a scream or something at least to wake us up in the night if that had happened. Jonah walked back to the tents, and the look on her face was grim.
"I don't think it was an animal, and that's not even the worst of it," she said, staring at us while fidgeting with the knife in her hand.
"An animal wouldn't need to flatten our car's tires and take the battery out," she finished, fixing the rest of us with a stare that almost felt accusing, as if to gauge our reactions.
"Wait, what?"
I demanded as I took in the new horrifying news. On top of our friends going missing in the night, it appeared we were stranded here as well. I couldn't believe what was happening. My mind raced for answers, while Casey and George looked on the verge of complete panic. Joe's eyes kept darting back and forth as if expecting some imminent attack from the foggy tree line near our camp. I looked at my watch and saw it was just after 5 a.m. I was considering proposing something, but my head started to hurt and thought I heard a low, droning chant again, like the one I had heard last night.
Do any of you hear that?" I asked with a ting of fear in my voice.
I was worried I was alone, but Jonah closed her eyes, focused, and then promptly agreed.
"Yes, I hear it. What is that? It sounds like people whispering something in the distance."
Casey and George tried to focus their hearing and listen for the sound, but claimed they could not hear what we heard. George broke the eerie calm first by quickly insisting we leave and get help.
If we walk, we could maybe reach the main road near the forest border in a couple of hours. It's not ideal, but it could work.
And leave Mark and Rachel out there?
Casey shrieked back at George and looked like she could throttle him for insinuating the idea.
It was probably those weird park rangers. They seemed super sketchy. I think they were fakes. I think they were planning something. No one else is here. They could be hunting us for sport. We need to leave now.
George screamed back at Rachel and turned to me with a pleading look in his eyes.
Calm down, you two, Jonah said, stepping between the two and trying to de-escalate the situation. Whatever we do, we know we can't leave them behind, and we also know that we need to work together if we are going to make it out in one piece, right? So let's try at the very least to see if we could follow any trail that they had left so we could try to save our friends and then get the hell out of here. Though we were all terrified, it seemed as if everyone agreed with Jonah's plan, myself included. We started searching around the campsite, and I remembered that there was a small splash of blood near the tent. I walked over and examined it more closely, and saw a small trail of footprints in the damp morning soil leading away from camp. I also saw a strange handprint on a tree nearby, but the print looked like it was actively fading away and somehow vanishing before my eyes.
Over here!
I shouted, and the others quickly came to investigate as well.
We have to follow it,
I blurted out before anyone else could react. I was about to point to the handprint as well, but it was completely gone now. I don't know how it vanished so quickly. Something very strange was happening. George spoke first.
We don't even know where this goes or if there's something dangerous out there. I still think we need to go get help. We can't help them if we get ourselves killed.
But we can't just leave them. If they're hurt, they won't even last however long it is till we get back. We need to go now.
Casey shouted back at George, venting her anxiety and frustration. Jonah looked deep in thought and finally broke the stalemate.
We should follow the trail. We should also salvage what we can from the camp and pack up just in case if we get lost further on. We are not without some type of shelter or the meager provisions we have left, mostly the dirt-flavored bars.
Jonah gave a slight smile as she showed a handful of the snack bars she had recovered. And Casey groaned.
It'll take too long to try to hike back to wherever it is we could find help, and I don't like the looks of that bloody trail. I think we have to go now and do our best to be safe without following it. I think we should try to avoid that ranger's camp unless the trail leads through it. A person was responsible for what happened to the car, and I don't trust them at all.
We packed up what we could, and at George's suggestion, we left a note explaining our intent to anyone who either came back to camp or found it.
We didn't know if it would work, but it couldn't hurt if we got lost and someone found it, they could hopefully come looking for us.
We followed the trail into the woods, but lost it shortly into the afternoon. We decided to keep moving in the general direction the trail had been going, though we were doubtful of moving as far down the path as we were going. It was about 1 p.m., and as we were trudging along, I considered we may have made a mistake when I paused to hear again the disturbing sound of chanting in the distance. Jonah stopped as well. She was hearing it too. This time, George and Casey stopped walking, and I figured they must finally be hearing it.
What the hell is that?
Casey cried out.
You guys are finally hearing it too?
I said, and before I could say another word, Jonah held up a fist and pointed in the distance.
Look over there.
She whispered to us and pointed into the tree line in the distance. There were figures moving about, but they looked to be wearing heavy robes, and we could not make out any features from this distance. We cautiously moved closer, following Jonah as she motioned for us to keep down and stay quiet. We ducked down near a small thicket and watched. The figures didn't speak, and they moved eerily slow and fluidly, almost like they were in some sort of trance. They were taking a sloshing clay jar of some liquid and dabbing it onto the tree trunks. After marking several trees with handprints and some sort of dye, one of them started to loudly chant some strange unknown verse of hum, and the marks disappeared off the trees before our eyes. We heard a terrible groaning sound, like the trees were starting to bend over somehow. Then the figure put down the clay jar and shouted in the same unknown language, clapping its hands twice and ran off. Jonah jumped out and was going to try and pursue them, when we all froze as we heard a terrible cracking, splintering sound, like that of a tree being felled close by. Before we could react, two of the nearby trees exploded and the top halves crumbled away. There was a terrible pressure in the air, and a thick bank of fog drifted in from seemingly nowhere. We did not know how those figures could have felled trees so quickly with whatever that bizarre spectacle was, or where this fog had come from so suddenly. Yet as we looked on, we realized with dawning horror that something was moving. Out of the destroyed tree stumps emerged two large
brand new luxury apartments. If you're in the market, listen, brand new luxury apartments. Champion has a new property, River Park of Dublin, which is a mile south of Dublin. Location is everything. Spacious 1, 2, and 3 bedroom homes, designer finishes, resort style amenities, exceptional customer service. That's Champion. Champion's brand new luxury apartments, River Park of Dublin. Now do something about it. Visit livewithchampion.com. Livewithchampion.com.
We all know that feeling. You finally manage to get away on vacation and the worrying starts. Will that bogus beware of dogs sign keep your home safe? What about that fake camera you set up? And will someone finally find your old hide and key rock? That's where ADT comes in. All that stuff, it's safe-ish. It seems fine when you don't really think about it, but you know it truly doesn't work. Instead, ADT provides security solutions that keep you actually safe, giving you real peace of mind. Because vacation is supposed to be, you know, relaxing. Don't settle for safe-ish. Visit ADT.com today to learn more.
Large figures. The hulking beings appeared to be close to 8 feet tall, maybe taller, but they shambled forward in a hunched posture that made it hard to tell. They were covered in gore-soaked animal hides from various creatures in a gruesome patchwork, and seemed to have a sick-looking skin that glistened underneath with an unearthly pallor. They smelled awful, and we stood there frozen with fear. The closest one moved forward, sniffing the air twice, and then let out a blood-curdling roar with a mouth that opened horizontally rather than vertically. Casey screamed and ran back the way we had come immediately. George was frozen in place, looking at the hulking thing's impossible features and was not responsive. I tried to grab George's arm and move him, but he just looked on in disbelief at the nightmare entities that had bursted forth from those trees with no explanation. I was almost right there with him, but pure survival instinct took hold and I forced myself to move. The creatures began moving towards us, acrid drool spilling from the horrible mishapen jaws. It seemed to sizzle and burn the ground where it landed. I grabbed George and pulled, but only managed to knock him down. He merely grunted and continued looking at the monstrous sight, oblivious to the mortal danger it represented. I bent down and tried to help him up and looked to Jonah, who by now had drawn up next to us and grabbed George's collar and hoisted him upright. I was about to speak, but before I could think twice, Jonah had gotten in front of us and told me in no uncertain terms,
"Go now, I will catch up."
"But what about you?"
I managed to blurt out in desperation and fear.
"I will try to lead these things away, just go."
"But you can't."
I started to protest.
"Now."
She yelled at me while showing me back and standing strong against the towering forms of the gargantuan abominations. After a severely delayed reaction, George screamed and finally turned and broke into a maniac sprint, and I struggled to follow. I looked back once as I fled, but the sight was soon obscured, and I heard howling and bellowing from inhuman lungs and the determined sounds of cutting and punching and kicking. And then my heart sank. Cries of pain and a strangled scream. I barely avoided hurtling face first into a tree as I ran for my life. The tears whisked off my face as I fled and left my best friend to her fate. We ran on for what felt like an eternity until we couldn't move anymore. I had barely kept my eyes on George and Casey. They had gone so far ahead that I didn't see her. Hopefully she managed to make it this far and not run into anything else. After running to the point where it felt like my heart would explode, I saw George trip and fall down. He started sobbing, and I knew now his mind was finally catching up to the horrible reality, if you could even call it that, of the situation.
"We're all gonna die! We're all gonna die! They're monsters! Freaking monsters!"
He was ranting and holding his head in his hands. I decided to do what a person in movies or TV does when dealing with a hysterical person. I slapped him in the face.
"Look, George,"
I pointed back. "There are no monsters following us. Jonah led them away at the cost of her own life, and you are not going to waste that sacrifice, and neither am I." I started to feel my own emotions welling up again, but I needed to stay strong to convey the message. "Casey is somewhere up ahead. We need to find her and get out of here first, and then we could try to find Mark and Rachel. And I can't do it alone. I need your help, all right?" I put a hand on his shoulder and tried to reassure him.
All right.
He managed to sniffle out, and after a moment, the tickle of lucidity began, and I saw gears in his brain turning again.
"I'm sorry, Nick. Shock is a terrible thing. I guess it could render the smartest of us helpless prey if we let it overwhelm us. I won't let it happen again. Let's go find Casey."
A determined look replaced the terrified visage from moments before, and I believed what he said. We moved on further to look for Casey. We stumbled through the forest for another hour, afraid to call out too loudly in case something else heard us and found out where we were. We mostly looked and saw with sinking dread the slow descent of the sun on the horizon. It would be dark soon and we had no light. Our gear was dropped back where the monsters attacked us from the trees. George had said he was confident he could be able to make a makeshift torch from materials nearby. I hoped it wouldn't come to that, but if we had anything, it would be better than just being stuck in the dark. As we moved on, we found we had gotten turned around and somehow made it back near the trail leading up the mountain. I don't know how it was possible. I thought we were leaving back in the other direction. Suddenly, we heard a familiar voice.
"Please help! Joe, Nick, George! Someone, anybody help!"
It was Casey's voice. We ran into the direction we had heard the voice, and we found a small alcove like the mouth of a cave and saw Casey sitting down on a raised stone platform in the cave. She was holding her foot. She might have twisted or broken her ankle somewhere in the retreat. She saw us and almost screamed for joy.
"Oh my God, finally! Help! My ankle, I think it's sprained! I need to get out of here before that thing comes back to catch us!"
We immediately moved into the cave to help her, but we were stopped suddenly as we moved in, and our legs were immobilized before we had stepped more than 2 feet into the cave.
"What the hell?"
I shouted almost in tandem with George, who had yelled the same thing with additional expletives. I looked down and noticed a fine thread had enveloped our legs, and as we tried to move it, it seemed to tighten and bind our lower bodies, spreading up to our knees. As we struggled to break free, a miasma of thick, foul-smelling vapor blew in the cave from outside. It was so horrible. I tried to hold my breath against the olfactory assault, but had to breathe eventually as I struggled with the binding on my feet. The vapor was noxious and burnt my lungs, and I hoped it would not be poisonous. George was not so lucky, and after inhaling a portion of the fetid fog, he threw up first on the floor and then fell over and threw up on himself, managing to roll over but unable to stand due to the tightening strands on his legs. I managed to put my shirt in front of my face to form a makeshift mask against the horrible air, and I pulled the small pocket knife I carried out, and I set to work cutting the strange threads from my feet. It was odd. It was very fine thread, and almost seemed like some sort of large-scale spiderweb. But it was not possible for even the largest spiders I knew of to produce a tripwire web that could snare humans like this. It had to be artificial. At least I hoped it was. I managed to free myself and bent down to get to work on freeing George from his bindings when I heard a low rumbling sound and a disturbing rhythmic pattern of movement. It sounded like many feet moving or scurrying, like a horde of rats. No, not rats, something larger. I was frantically sawing at the thread, but because he fell down, George was bound in the sickly webbing all over and was practically stuck to the floor. He finally heard the thrumming footsteps as well and mumbled something inaudible in between gagging. As we struggled on the floor, I finally freed George and helped him up. I almost fell back in disbelief when we heard cruel laughter and saw something horrible. A voice spoke in the shifting haze of vapor.
"Oh my, look who has fallen into my little old web.
You boys will really do anything for a damsel in distress."
Casey was no longer there, and a woman we recognized as Ranger Jessica stood in her place. She was dressed in a strange robe with odd symbols on it, and she held out her hands and smiled as we writhed on the ground. Another figure in a black robe emerged near the stone circle. The figure raised its head, and I could not make out its eyes, but I saw pale, almost emaciated skin and jagged yellow teeth glinting in the dim light of the cave. To our surprise, this figure spoke, but the words were not in English. It sounded like Latin or some old language, perhaps. It said,
"Vetont gras forman afar ad me."
Then the figure pointed at us, and the rush of footsteps finally stopped. Jessica nodded to the hooded figure and said,
"It will be done."
She turned to us and gave another laugh and said in a mocking tone,
"I hope you boys don't have arachnophobia."
She made an odd gesture with her hands that caused a strange shimmer in the air. Then there was a palpable sense of something that had just happened, but we didn't know what until I heard a strangled gasp from George and knew he saw something behind us near the mouth of the cave. I did not want to take my eyes off of the figure, but I knew there was likely a new threat in the cave. Against my better judgment, I slowly turned around and my heart caught in my throat. The thing couldn't be real, and I pressed my hands against my eyes and blinked hard to make sure I was really seeing what I was seeing. What it was a monstrous, bloated shadow with a horrifying spider-like outline standing before us. It was looming high enough to reach the ceiling of the cave at around 8 or 9 feet tall. It had large, urticating hairs like that of a tarantula. But the thing was not any true genus of spider I knew of, since despite the obviously impossible size, the head where the eyes, mouth, and fangs would normally be had a single burning eyeball and a large maw containing rows of serrated teeth that looked like a shark. The sheer impossibility of horror of the sight almost drove me insane, and I fell back from the sight as if literally struck, landing hard on my side but never taking my eyes off the impossible sight before me. After an awful pause, it exploded into motion. Before I could process my thoughts on what to do, it had George and was enveloping him in fresh webbing. Faced with the second nightmare in one day, I did not freeze in shock as well, and promptly wheeled around and tried to leap after the figure in the robe in hopes that if I'd had some control over that horrible creature, it might not risk hurting its master. As I jumped to try to reach the robed figure and Jessica, I thought maybe if I could stop them, this thing would just vanish. I fell back in horror as a sentient wall of smaller spiders formed between us and the hooded figure. The figure muttered something inaudible, and to my disbelief, it had vanished in the blink of an eye, along with Jessica.
"What the F is going on?"
I screamed aloud. The living carpet of smaller spiders had vanished, but as I turned around, to my horror, I soon noticed the giant arachnid remained. George was a heaped bundle of webbing at that point, and I was unarmed. I knew I would likely die, but I was determined to not just be an easy target. I grabbed several jagged rocks from the stone circle and readied them in a madness-fueled last stand. The spider reared back as if to lunge, but then stopped and drummed its front legs as if sensing something. I heard an odd clicking and then something like the striking of a lighter, and suddenly the dim cave came alive with a wash of orange flame that engulfed the spider and sent it flailing its limbs and crashing into the walls. I tried to evade, but was struck by one of the limbs.
Apartment people, my name is Dave, and I bring you good news. From Champion, River Park of Dublin. It's a brand new community now open and leasing. I've been to it. It's kitchen clean. And they've got a new enticement. You get 2 months free when you sign a 12-month or longer lease, and you move in by the beginning of October. Everything's new. New pool, new fitness center, free Starbucks coffee, EV charging stations, parking, garage. River Park of Dublin. Now make the move, literally. LiveWithChampion.com. Schedule a tour. LiveWithChampion.com.
If you're shopping while working, eating, or even listening to this podcast, then you know and love the thrill of a deal. But are you getting the deal and cash back? Rakuten shoppers do. They get the brands they love, savings, and cash back. And you can get it too. Start getting cash back at your favorite stores like Target, Nike, and Instacart. Stack sales on top of cashback and feel what it's like to know you're maximizing the savings. It's easy to use, and you can get your cashback sent to you through PayPal or check. The idea is simple. Stores pay Rakuten for sending them shoppers, and Rakuten shares the money with you as cashback. Download the free Rakuten app or go to Rakuten.com to start saving today. It's the most rewarding way to shop. That's Rakuten, Rakuten.com.
And crashed hard into the cave wall, but suffered no serious injury. The blasphemy against nature died shriveling into a clump of burning, foul-smelling embers after what felt like several minutes of horrible immolation. Dazed, injured, horrified, and confused, I looked on to see what the hell had just happened. I heard footsteps, and my heart leapt when I saw a familiar form entering the cave. It was Jonah. She was covered in blood, and her clothing was torn to pieces. A large strip of cloth that was covering her right eye like an eye patch, and she was holding some sort of makeshift lighter hairspray flamethrower. I couldn't believe my eyes.
Jonah, is that really you?
I asked aloud, not believing my eyes. She stepped forward and managed to shake the stoic look of desperate resolve in the face of overwhelming horror long enough to give me a familiar smile.
Hey, Nick. Couldn't stay out of trouble while I was gone, eh?
I tripped over myself and rushed to her, grabbing her in a bear hug, and promptly began crying. I was so relieved. She winced, and I loosened up a bit.
Sorry, Nick. I think I may have broken ribs, so hugs will have to wait.
She laughed, and a pained wheeze came out.
Come on, let's check on George.
I was so excited to see Joe, I felt guilty for forgetting George, webbed up like a giant fly. We started cutting through the thick webbing and managed to free him. He was not breathing, and I started to panic again. After a terrible moment of fear and CPR attempts, he sprang to life and began hacking and coughing and gasping for air.
Oh, thank God you're alive,
I said as I tried to help George to his feet.
What happened? I had a horrible dream I was ensnared by a giant spider,
George said, clutching his head and continuing to cough.
Yeah, sounds like a bad dream for sure,
I said, not wanting to explain the reality of the situation to him and burst the comforting bubble of sanity he constructed for himself in this pandemonium of madness we found ourselves in. We exited the cave, and to our misfortune, we realized it was starting to get dark.
What do we do?
I asked Jonah, hoping she had some idea.
The camping supplies are not far. We could try to hide in a tent in the outcropping of the mountain. The forest itself might not be safe. There might be more of those things out there.
She winced as she said it, and I figured she was referring to what had attacked her earlier.
Look, you guys,
she asserted with abnormal fear playing on her face.
We know we need to get out of these woods. There's some strange force keeping us here. We cannot escape just by running, and I fear that we are being hunted, not just by those psychopaths in the robes to kill us, but to take us alive for something worse.
George and I both gulped as we considered the implication of our three missing friends and how George and I likely would have been the fourth and fifth.
I don't know why they want us or why no one else seems to be able to enter this part of the forest to help, but we have to assume we are on our own. The creatures they control are horrible, but they are not invincible, and the people who control them, at the end of the day, are just human as well. If we could find their camp or base of operations, we could try to sneak in, save our friends, and maybe kill as many of these fuckers as we can along the way.
There was a gleam of righteous anger in her remaining eye that, despite the insanity of her plan, had, to my surprise, genuinely inspired. George didn't speak. I knew he was doubtful of the plan, but didn't want to contradict his rescuer.
Come on then, let's go. We have to try and find a safe place and get some small bit of rest, and then we could press on. We have to at least try. Rachel, Mark, and Casey could still be alive. Come on,
she said as she led us further into the darkening gloom of the forest to an uncertain fate. Surprisingly, we had managed to find a tent and some provisions and took them up to a small alcove under an outcropping on the hillside of the mountain. We rested in shifts and only took a few hours of total rest. There was no attack, mercifully, since we all suspected there would be. We packed up and pressed on. As we walked, I was struck by how incredible it was that Jonah was still alive.
How did you survive back there?
I asked her rather bluntly, with amazement still in my eyes.
You don't want to know. I would like to say I gave as good as I got, but that might be a lie.
She laughed and raised the bloody cloth to her face to reveal the ruin of her right eye. It was terrible, and I winced both at the terror of the injury and the implication that such a thing had happened to my best friend.
I am sorry I didn't stay,
I said sullenly.
Don't be. I wouldn't have let you. I barely got away. Those frickers were fast, and you have never been as fast as me.
she said, winking and nudging me on the shoulder.
Come on, let's go. We have a long hike to reach the top.
We trudged up on the mountain with a chill breeze at our back. After a while, we reached a summit that had an odd series of standing stones circled around a small body of water. It was too small to call a lake, but too large to call a pond. We did not know how such a large body of water was up on the mountain. We hadn't seen anything like this on the guides, though I guess considering all the insane things we saw, the guide was sort of useless now. We saw more of the robed figures near the stones, and we moved forward as carefully as we could. Jonah had her knife in hand and was stalking ahead, trying to get behind one of the stones and get to the source of this madness, or at least what we presumed it to be. The large group of assembled people, or revelers, or druids, or cultists, were here. Whatever they really were, it didn't matter. They had abducted our friends, and clearly, this was some sort of bizarre ritual involving them. As we inched closer and listened, I heard several mentions of a word. Beltan, or Beltane. George mentioned that May Eve was also known as Beltane. The day was a pagan holiday and one of eight Sabbats. It was regarded as Walpurgis Night and occurred opposite its other more famous Sabbat day of Hallow's Eve. The sudden realization of the current date at that point struck me like a blow. It was April 30th. May Eve that very night. The mention of the gathering that the rangers had told us about made me realize that these monstrous cultists were the other celebrants, and the invitation was not coincidence after all. They wore a large ornamental headpiece and seemed to hold a position of authority over this throngs of maniacs. The figure addressed the crowd and made odd gestures with its hand, and then to our horror, it pointed directly at where we were hiding. It knew we were there. The leader figure spoke with a booming voice that reverberated through the channels and ravines of the mountain.
Sabiti, ve, kick this!
They said while turning to the body of water and casting a handful of brightly colored dust into it.
Oh shit, what is it this time?
George said aloud, as if reading my thoughts as well. Jonah's knuckles turned white, gripping her knife, and I could see she meant to throw herself at the lead figure in the next moment. We looked on as the figure was suddenly flanked by two of the four, then six, then 12 other people. They all began chanting, and a stone dais began to emerge from the center of the body of water. Three of the robed figures were pulling large burlap sacks that writhed as if people were alive and thrashing around inside. Then my fears were confirmed as they removed them from the bags and saw the bound and prone forms of Mark, Rachel, and Casey. They were stripped down and had their hands and feet tied and were gagged as well. I looked around to see what possible hope there could be, but I saw the multitude of hooded figures all chanting and circling us, and the terrible scent was highlighted by the shine of a waning gibbous moon. George pulled out a tent stake that he had on his belt and attempted to charge the person closest to him. There was a loud splashing and rippling in the water, and we heard pounding footsteps on the ground near the water. Its source was not seen, but suddenly, just as George attempted to stab one of the chanting maniacs, he was drawn up into the air by some invisible force, and his body was engulfed into gravity-defying water. I couldn't believe what I was seeing, and I reached out and screamed for them to let him go.
What do you people want from us?
I yelled to the mass of celebrants who had not paid any heed to my words. I couldn't see Jonah, but I saw George's limp form slowly placed on the dais at the middle of the water by the same invisible force that had knocked him out. I was panicked and awestruck by the sheer nightmare lunacy of the situation, and only my imminent peril aroused my mind into cautious, proactive action. I saw the figures converging on me now. Three celebrants holding rope and weapons were closing in on me. I was unarmed, but I ran forward and hurled myself into the would-be attacker and managed to knock them to the ground. I proceeded to smash my fists into the attacker's face, and the effort caused their hood to come off, and I was not prepared for what I saw. It was a sickly pale, almost albino man. His eyes looked like two giant cataracts, yet somehow he could see, and his other senses seemed not active at all beyond whatever instructions he was given by the leader. The man seemed like an empty shell. After the disturbing revelation, my shoulders were seized by the other two attackers who bore down on me and tried to bind my arms. They almost succeeded, but again, for the third time in that horrible nightmare, Jonah saved my life. She lunged forward and proceeded to slash the throat of one of my attackers. There was a jet of arterial blood and the figure fell to one knee, not gasping for the free-flowing wound on their neck, but merely kneeling down as if politely acknowledging their own impending death by blood loss. The chanting was growing louder, and Jonah screamed in rage as she killed the other figure, a pallid woman by the looks of it, who was just like the man, gave little protest to their own violent death. The leader, apparently aware that we had actually posed a threat, drew up to the water's edge and produced another handful of that strange dust, but Jonah was quicker. She threw her knife, and it found its mark. The leader dropped the dust and regarded the knife in its arm. It backed up a step and pointed to Jonah.
Mors hork yinni!
The leader shouted a furious-sounding direction, and the formerly dispassionate celebrants went into a frenzy of aggression and began assaulting Jonah and beating her to the ground, punching and kicking and stomping. She threw several of them off, but was already badly hurt and couldn't hold them off forever. I saw the scene and ran as fast as I could to intervene. I got there and kicked two of them off her, but I was tackled to the ground and punches and kicks started falling on me. I thought we would be beaten to death, but I saw an odd thing as I laid on my back being pummeled mercilessly. It was a large, unsettling pile of that odd-colored dust resting on the ground. I reached for it and grabbed a handful. Then in a half-baked plan, I forced my body to move under the weight of an assault and threw the dust into the edge of the water. There was a terrible crashing noise from beneath the water, and the fanatic stopped briefly looking out the water. I quickly pointed at the lunatics who had been assaulting Jonah, and I shouted, "Subidi ve victus!" The leader flinched back, and I looked on in horror and amazement when the body of the fanatics grew around Jonah and I wrenched up and were off the ground moving into the water. Several of them seemed to escape, but after they had been elevated up into the air, they fell landing horribly and, in a few cases, audibly breaking limbs, backs, or in one case, a neck. I fell down near Jonah. She was badly beaten and bleeding all over, but she was still breathing. I knew that I couldn't move her, but I held her hand and prepared to face our fate, but as I looked up, I saw the leader make a sign with their hands and the celebrants started vanishing. Then the water started vanishing. Then to my horror, the dais with the prone forms of our friends on it still. Then finally the leader of the lonesome...
Apartment people, my name is Dave and I bring you good news. From Champion, River Park of Dublin. It's a brand new community now open and leasing. I've been to it. It's kitchen clean. And they've got a new enticement. You get 2 months free when you sign a 12-month or longer lease and you move in by the beginning of October. Everything's new. New pool, new fitness center, free Starbucks coffee, EV charging stations, parking, garage. River Park of Dublin. Now make the move, literally. livewithchampion.com. Schedule a tour. livewithchampion.com.
We all know that feeling. You finally manage to get away on vacation and the worrying starts. Will that bogus beware of dogs sign keep your home safe? What about that fake camera you set up? And will someone finally find your old hide and key rock? That's where ADT comes in. All that stuff, it's safe-ish. It seems fine when you don't really think about it, but you know it truly doesn't work. Instead, ADT provides security solutions that keep you actually safe, giving you real peace of mind. Because vacation is supposed to be, you know, relaxing. Don't settle for safe-ish. Visit ADT.com today to learn more.
Cultists. We were alone on a mountaintop covered with our own blood, and that of the maniacs who had attacked us. Our friends were gone, and we were alone. Alive, but alone. It had been over a year since it happened. I have tried to write an account of it before, but could never summon the courage. Yet now I feel I must, because others need to know the dangers that lie in the hidden shadows of Mount Deception. Jonah survived, and we were rescued by a park ranger who oddly knew nothing of the madness that had occurred there. He simply stated that he had found an abandoned campground in the park and a trail leading up the mountain and found us both there bloodied and broken, but not dead. We were in such bad shape, Jonah had to be airlifted to the hospital. Out of fear and paranoia, I asked him if he was working with any of the park rangers by the name of Kyle or Jessica. He said that there was no one currently posted by those names, and that the station had been closed down for over a year. While recovering, we talked a lot about what had happened to us, but could not believe the insanity of what had occurred, and we spared the most unbelievable details from our stories to the authorities. Those same authorities believed that our friends had gotten lost, and since their bodies were never recovered, a more declarative statement would not be made yet. They stressed that unfortunately, when people went missing in the wilderness, recovery was very unlikely after a certain point. They said it could happen to the most experienced campers, but they don't know the truth. They don't know what we know. Though, did we even really know? We had no idea where they had gone, or the deranged celebrants for that matter. We had no idea if they were still alive, or if they had been sacrificed to some unearthly force. After months of recovery and emotional turmoil, Jonah made a decision. I begged her not to go, but Jonah is going back. She is going back to that hellish mountain. Over a year from the date to try to find those demonic fanatics, their leader, and more importantly, our friends, if they're still alive. I don't think I have the courage to go back with her, but I can't let her go alone. She just keeps insisting she needs to try. In the end, I know I will not let her go alone. I can't convince her to stay, so I have accepted the fact that I must go with her. The idea of returning is almost more than I could bear. Returning to that nightmarish woods and the impossible mountain. I will do it, though. I have to do it for her, for them, and maybe for myself as well, if only just to prove that I can. Maybe we can save them, or maybe they are lost forever. There's only one way to know for sure, even if it costs us everything we had left. So, I must leave this account of what happened before so that if something happens again, there'll be a record. But in the meantime, whether we return or not, please do not go near Mount Deception on Walpurgis Night. They could still be there.
Apartment people, my name is Dave, and I bring you good news. From Champion, River Park of Dublin, it's a brand new community now open and leasing. I've been to it. It's kitchen clean. And they've got a new enticement. You get 2 months free when you sign a 12-month or longer lease and you move in by the beginning of October. Everything's new. New pool, new fitness center, free Starbucks coffee, EV charging stations, parking, garage, River Park of Dublin. Now make the move, literally. LiveWithChampion.com. Schedule a tour. LiveWithChampion.com.
Cleveland is where the urban meets the outdoors, where cultural celebrations meet rabid sports fans meet the symphony, where nobody goes hungry and everybody loves music. Fueled by passion, we are the land for life. From rich history to hidden gems, the Legends of the Land podcast shares the real stories from real Clevelanders that shape the city. From iconic chefs to grassroots changemakers, sports heroes to creative visionaries, learn why living all out is in Cleveland's DNA. Go to thisiscle.com/podcast.
Save big money on your outdoor project at Menards. Take the guesswork out of landscaping with our free, easy-to-use design program. Plus, Menards has the largest in-stock selection of concrete landscape blocks at the best prices. Get started on your dream landscape now. Visit us in-store or on Menards.com to see our full selection of landscape blocks and get your project started today.
Save